go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! All right, coffee break's over. Back on your heads. We had such a lovely evening last night. Pity the world had to get up this morning and ruin it. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. That's where our little community resides. That's where you go to click on the tab chat room and jump into the chat room and enjoy the real-time multimedia experience that is the Horn Chat Room Gang. Good evening, Barbie! Good evening, Barbie! Good evening, News Ninja Carol Baker. Good evening, Gerald. Good evening, Mr. Gibson. And good evening to Third Stage Guild Navigator, who has folded space and is presently incarnated both as Man Cave and Sparky. More folks will be wandering by, both pleasantly and presently. 2 minutes past the hour. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, and it is Thorn in the Side Thursday on the Horn. And you know what? It's living up to its name. No, we had a lovely evening last night, a wonderful conversation, a romp through musical history. And it was very, very difficult to just turn the program around and go back into the swamp, so we didn't. That couldn't possibly last, though, could it? I remember when Ted Turner tried to put on a show called Good News. People stayed away from it in droves. Oh, well. Now, it's Thorn in the Side Thursday, and we got a lot of work to do and some catching up to do this evening. I wanted to start out with a couple of things. One being, and don't worry, I'm not gonna bust out all Don Lemon and wonder if the co-pilot of the German Wings aircraft was swallowed by a black hole or maybe teleported by aliens. No. Not going to do that at all. And frankly, I don't much like the ickiness that surrounds this kind of coverage, but if what a French investigator is saying is true, then what an oh my God law of unintended consequences we have here. You know by now the details. Yesterday, the commuter airline on a route from Barcelona to Dusseldorf did a gradual, gentle descent from 38,000 feet, cruising altitude, until it descended at full speed right into a mountainside, killing all on board. Black box information says that the pilot can be heard gently rapping. He'd apparently gone to the loo, and he can be heard rapping, gently rapping, tapping at his cockpit door, and then becoming more and more frantic until he's banging on the door trying to get in. And the French investigator, they're calling him a prosecutor, I don't think it's a one-to-one kind of comparison between prosecutor here and prosecutor there, but that's entirely beside the point. Um, the investigator is saying that the co-pilot basically committed suicide for himself and, what, 118, 117 other people? And, of course, the reason that the pilot could not get back into the cockpit was because the cockpit door was locked. Now, you might recall in the aftermath of September the 11th, 2001, that we had a paranoid hissy over the fact that all cockpit doors must be lockable from the inside. Mm-hmm. Because we are a coward nation and a coward world. Now, the Horn Family Commune Congregation knows that when I say we are a coward nation, that I mean C-O-W-E-R-E-D, coward, that we are, philosophically and spiritually and emotionally speaking, that we are huddled up in a little fetal ball in the corner, sucking our thumbs, afraid that the ISIL headloppers and the Al-Qaeda and the terrorists are going to come and get us and eat our Bibles. Although, I believe statistically there have been more white Christian terrorists in Europe than anyone of the Muslim extraction in the last 10, 15 years. Something like that. Did I read that somewhere? I think I did. Yeah. So now we're confronted, if that is in fact the reality of what happened to the German wings, that's the name of the air, it's a little bargain basement, you can't... There will be no peanuts for you on this flight! Cheap flight airline. If that's indeed what happened, then it's a... What do we call that? It's an own goal in soccer. It's a self-inflicted wound. It is the law of unintended consequences, putting on great big heavy boots and just kicking us right in the ass. Because see, here's the interesting part, as far as I've been able to glean, and maybe I'm entirely wrong. But so the cabin door, the cockpit door, after the pilot has gone to the loo and splashed a little cold water on the back of the neck and the code. Yes, that's what we need, a little cold water on the back of the neck and the code. When he's done that, and he comes back, there's a little keypad, and he goes, beep, 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 and he can enter the code into the keypad, and the door will open up, and he's back in the cockpit. The only thing is, you never know about those wily tourists. They might have your code. So, therefore, when they were putting in the, oh, my God, we're scared, we're afraid, we're very afraid, fear and loathing security system in the cockpits, they made sure that on the inside of the cockpit, on the interior in the cockpit, there's a means to disable the key code keypad entry code button pushing thingy. Did you know any of this? I didn't know any of this until today. And so the French investigator is saying that's exactly what happened. The co-pilot, who had decided he was sick of living on this mortal coil and had unilaterally made that decision for 117 other people as well, that he disabled, once the pilot said, Hans, I will be right back, I'm going to St. Lou. After he did that, and he left, and slammed the door, at which point time the co-pilot, oh, well, time to go. Or else laughed maniacally, and disabled the pilot's ability to get back into the cockpit. Son of a... Is this one of those things that falls to the accounting department in the FAA and the world equivalents of the FAA, where there's some sort of cost-benefit analysis? well, you know, we're going to keep all of those presumed terrorists who just want to blow up every plane in the world because they hate freedom, by keeping them out of the cockpit. Are we going to make, so we're going to lose 117 people every now and then when, you know, the co-pilot goes a little, you know, funny, you know, in the head, you know, funny. Apparently so. And I just, and that, and the story that I mentioned briefly last night on the program that happened down here in Beckley, where the guy who was on the run from Pennsylvania charges of making terroristic threats, a crime that didn't even exist 15 years ago. Well, that guy went speeding away, running away from the cops, speeding in the wrong direction on the West Virginia Turnpike, killed a woman and crippled and or maimed her three daughters or daughter and friends, or what, young women, girls, okay, girls. Now, would the guy have done that? I believe his Mr. Herrera was his name. Would he have done that had he been charged with Article 99A, criminal dumbass? Would he have been charged with that had his name been Jones? It seems that we are, well, what is it that Kate on the Front Range always said to me? Chaos is always self-correcting, or the universe is, what was that, Kate? Isn't this a case of we've got a rat problem, so we're going to bring in cats to deal with that happened in Hawaii, didn't it? They had a snake problem, so they brought in mongooses to deal with the snakes, and they had a mongoose problem. And pretty soon you're bringing in elephants, and then you got to bring the mice back to deal with the elephants. It's kind of a feedback loop of stupid, isn't it? But in many ways, after the lovely evening we had last night, I felt a little bit like Slim Pickens in Blazing Saddles, riding up and hollering, "Now what in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here?" That so far could very easily be the motto for the 21st century. We're in a feedback loop of stupid, and when you shake the magic eight ball, it seems stuck on, "You're fucked." Doesn't it? Because there's plenty of evidence to suggest that is in fact the case. And I've got it all lined up here. And yes, we missed out on prayer meeting Wednesday last night, so there may be some prayer meeting-ish stuff this evening, but we're not going to do all the shtick that goes with it. No. But we've got a stupidity problem. Do you remember flying on airplanes before September 11th, 2001, when you'd just be toddling along through the air at 480 miles an hour or whatever the hell it is at 37,000 feet, and you just look up there and you kind of lean out into the aisle and you could see the pilot just sitting there flying the plane because the door was open. Well, that's intolerable. It's a dangerous world. What we've got to do is we've got to lock the pilot into the cockpit so none of the terrorists can get through the door. And then, just in case those wily terrorists may come up with the keypad code, we got to be able to disable it from the inside. That'll stop those terrorists. it seems like there should be, I don't know, a more simple, more elegant solution. I don't know. But worth considering. Oh, by the way, some good news. You know, we're trying to stay out in front of fundraising. And I didn't even mention it at the beginning of the program. I get so sick of mentioning it. But it has to be mentioned. We finished the evening not making the evening's fundraising goal last night. But I want to send out very special thanks to Robert and to Carl and to Mark, who took care of that and got us started on this evening. I am happy to announce that as of 6:16 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time on this year, 26th day of March, 2015, we have only $105 to raise this evening. And as far as the rest of the month of March is concerned, if we do what we need to be doing, the rest of the month of March is basically $700. And that finishes March and actually gets us in front into April, which is a beautiful thing, and all the horns bills are paid. And we're actually current for the first time in a very long time. I find that very exciting. So, thank you, Carl. Thank you, Robert. Robert kicked in last night as well. Thank you. Thank you very kindly to Mark in Florida. And anybody else wanting to jump in, of course, the PayPal interface is at headonradionetwork.com under the tab Contribute. And, yes, there are some rather nosy questions. Forget about them. Just fill in the basics. Name, amount, click, and, you know, it's all about getting to the next screen. Get to the next screen. Yeah? Yeah. And so if we raise $105 tonight, $150, we'll be on schedule and we'll be doing great, and I'll continue the frenzy of bill paying. Okay, then. Oh, the Postal Service address. Until such time as I have the presence of mind to go on the website and fill that out and put that in there, the mailing address is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV, 25801. And, of course, checks and money orders should never be made payable to Bob Kincaid, but should be made payable instead to The Horn, so Boss Man Wayne can deal with them. He'll be going to the mailbox again probably Saturday, if I know Boss Man Wayne. And a program note, I had thought that I would be gone tomorrow. Tomorrow is the 18th birthday of our youngest, but it is still a school day. So she said, "Nope, Dad, we'll celebrate my 18th birthday on the weekend." It's her birthday. It's her call. So there will be a Friday on the front porch tomorrow evening. Yay! And, of course, I encourage as many as wish to participate to, in fact, participate as they wish. But there will be a Friday on the front porch tomorrow. Yes. Let's see. Where to go? Oh, I've had this story laying around for a little bit, and it just happens to dovetail with one that hit the news today. After Steve Jobs died, Tim Cook became the CEO of Apple. And I have a feeling this is going to piss off the right wing some more. You'll understand about the some more part in a minute. Tim Cook announced in the last 24 hours or so that he intends, upon his shuffling off this mortal coil, whenever that is, to give away all of his wealth. And he is, he's a pauper. Tim Cook is not. He is apparently, has a net worth of around $120 million. And on top of that, he has restricted stock, presumably in Apple, worth about $665 million. What? No billionaire. He's not even trying. Well, that's okay. The Apple Watch hasn't gone on sale yet, and frankly, that precious little 1% gizmo, the high line of which runs for what, $19,000-$20,000. No. I spend $20,000 on a watch. I want actual little Swiss people inside it making it be a watch. Really. But no, the most expensive and the Apple Watch goes on sale, what, next month? I think the cheapest version is $350, then there's a $500 version, and then it starts getting really silly. I have not been bitten by the Apple Watch bug. It might be really cool if you're one of those people who has the stamina and the physical ability to go out and run 9 million miles a day, because you can just sit there and watch it, and while you're looking at it, not notice that you're about to run into a telephone pole, but you can watch it and know how many beats per minute and what your oxygen saturation is and all of that, right? And golly Moses, you can wave your watch at the credit card hickey and pay with your watch. I mean, why this is supposed? I don't understand. But anyway, the Apple Watch hasn't gone on sale yet, so maybe that'll push poor Tim Cook over into billionaire status. But anyway, whatever. But that, so Tim Cook says he's got a nephew. He has no kids of his own. He's got a nephew who's 10 years old. He's going to make sure that he can have the best education that money can buy. And out there, would he just prepay everything at Stanford and have done? Pay all the way through the PhD program, law program, whatever, and just say, go, enjoy. Or maybe send him back east. Hey, maybe Tim Cook's nephew could go to the Harvard School of Business like Willard Romney and George W. Bush and learn and get himself one of those more bigger asshole degrees. I'm being mean now. I apologize. But he's going to take care of his nephew, which I think is laudable. And the rest of it, he's giving away. He is giving away. Tim Cook has said he will give away his wealth when he's done using it. And it'll go to charities, philanthropies, things like that. Good. 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 Thank you. Thank you, Tim Cook. That's a laudable way to live on the planet. There's even an interesting quote along through here. He says, I have a nephew that I dearly love that's 10, and when I look at him and when I think of leaving a world that's not as good as when I entered it, there's no bigger sin than that. That's something he said at Climate Week in New York City in September of this past year. Good. I mean, that really good. That's socially responsible. And hopefully some part or portion of his wealth will go to doing some justice work. Oh, I know. Ron and Raleigh wants to know. Subject line, Jesus Christ! He couldn't tell time. They didn't have watches. You had to walk around with a sundial or an hour. Had they even invented the hourglass by then? Ron says, Jesus Christ, what the hell does the damn thing do for $20K? Is oral sex involved? No. It's not that big. It's tiny. No, the 20,000 version is done up in like 14 karat rose gold or regular gold or whatever, and it's got a band made from the skin of like endangered zebra hyena hide or something. I'm sure it doesn't have the endangered anything, because they're no, but it's a status symbol. And you know what, by this time next year maybe we'll see LeBron. He'll be caught by paparazzi somewhere, and they'll go, hey, look, LeBron's wearing the $20,000 Apple Watch. Or, God knows, Kanye will have a $20,000 Apple Watch. Or Bieber will have a $20,000 Apple Watch. And there's all an aspect of Richard Coreyism to it. so Tim Cook said, you know, I think it's a sin to leave a world worse off than when I entered it. If more of the 1% felt that way, maybe we wouldn't feel quite so nasty about the 1%. Because just as a general reminder, it's not the people who are dirt poor who are ruining the planet by trying to eat a little scrap of food every day. No. And there are the ongoing issues that Apple has with its supply chain and the way its workers are treated. News Ninja Carol Baker pointing out, if an Apple Watch is a sign of status, expect to see me with a Granny Smith strapped to my wrist. I'll watch it. I'm holding out for the wine sap, Carol. Or maybe a Honeycrisp or a Fuji. Ooh, those are good. So I want to backtrack for a minute because I have been sitting on this story for weeks now. Well, 16 days. Yeah, that's weeks. That's 2 weeks and 2 days. Well, okay, so I'm a snob, Carol. Wine sap, honey crisp. Oh! You elitist, you! Nah, I'm a hillbilly. I'll be wearing a Golden Delicious because it was first discovered right here in West Virginia, a scant few miles away from me in Clay County. It really was. The Golden Delicious apple is a product of West Virginia. And when they're good, they're wonderful. When they're bad, Golden Delicious is, and Red Delicious is especially, can get a little mealy, don't you think? Oh, see, that's where I was going. Ron and Raleigh read my mind. Hey, Bob, Jay-Z and Beyonce will have matching custom ones that will cost more than the run-of-the-mill 20K unit. I'm sure. The peon millionaire 20K unit will not be good enough for Jay-Z and Beyonce. Yeah, absolutely. And little baby celery will have it, right. But anyway, back to Tim Cook for a minute, because this is just too good. This is too thorn in the side Thursday to pass up. So out there in the wide, wide world of wingnuttery, there's an outfit called the National Center for Public Policy Research. And I mean, they are 17 different shades of stupid. Back on March the 10th, I was invited to contact either Judy Kent or David Almasy to discuss the disgusting Tim Cook. Dateline Cupertino, California, Washington, D.C. Apparently, the National Center for Public Policy Research also folds space. At today's annual meeting... Wait. Barbie loves it when I do the Cronkite voice. At today's annual meeting of Apple investors in Cupertino, California, where the National Center for Public Policy Research introduced a shareholder resolution asking the tech giant for more transparency about the risks associated with its alternative energy investments, Apple CEO Tim Cook seemed to have a message for shareholders who expect for-profit businesses to have profits. You aren't Apple's kind of people. Cook twice made specific comments denigrating return on investment, or ROI, essentially doubling down on a statement he made to the National Center last year when Cook told the National Center and other shareholders interested in return on investment to get out of Apple stock.
I was extremely surprised to hear Tim Cook denigrate the role of profit-making in business,
said National Center Free Enterprise Project Director Justin Danhoff-Esk, who attended the meeting on behalf of the National Center and presented the National Center's shareholder proposal.
businesses make profits by offering goods and services that make people's lives better. People buy them for that reason. There is no shame in earning profit. Mr. Cook seems to think there is. Our proposal highlighted potential risks that Apple investors may face. Apple has invested hundreds of millions.
Here it comes. Did I say anything about a hockey puck? If I didn't, I meant to. Hockey puck. Whoop, 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 whoop. Hockey puck. Duct tape. Whoop, 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 whoop.
Our proposal highlighted potential risks that Apple's investors may face. Apple has invested hundreds of millions in alternative energy programs. These programs presently often enjoy significant taxpayer backing, but there is no guarantee that taxpayer subsidies will be permanent. We believe the board of directors should be forthright with shareholders about the extent of Apple's exposure to risk should the popularity of causes like global warming wane and voters and politicians lose interest in subsidizing green energy.
Now, did I mention the fact that the National Center Free Enterprise Project, National Center for Public Policy Research, goes hammer and tongs attacking the idea of green energy, spends night and day worrying about what we can possibly do to stop those evil solar panels from gathering electricity for free from the sun? Yeah, them. Asshats. So,
Justin Danhoff-esque
introduced the right wing. Oh, by the way, did you notice in that statement that global warming is only a cause? You know, kind of like the Salvation Army ringing a bell outside Wally World beginning at Thanksgiving. You know, that's a cause. You know, you throw a couple of quarters into the pot for the cause. It's not an existential crisis that affects every living human being on the earth. And to the extent that some of their graves will wind up under the sea, some of the dead ones, too, for that matter. As prepared for delivery, Danhoff introduced the National Center's proposal, stating,
if Apple were to receive no more government handouts for its renewable energy projects, would CEO Tim Cook still put your money where his mouth is and spend hundreds of millions of dollars on alternative energy endeavors? Rhetoric aside, it seems very unlikely that Apple would abandon its fiduciary duties to its shareholders and engage in such reckless activity. But we don't know for sure because Apple's board opposes our proposal. Some of you may recall that Mr. Cook stood on this stage last year and claimed that Apple doesn't care about bloody return on investment. Then why is Apple a publicly traded for-profit company? A few facts are clear. Apple is heavily investing in renewable energy projects. Renewable energy projects are heavily subsidized by American taxpayers. These subsidies are not permanent and are anti-competitive. We have legitimate concerns that potential changes in government policies on alternative energy may harm Apple's investors.
No, that's not the guy who works for Apple, Robert in Morgantown. This is the asshole from the
National Center for Public Policy Research. It's a benign sounding organization with a benign sounding voice behind it. I mean, we just want transparency at Apple. We want the Apple Board of Directors to understand that they're killing Apple with all of this clean energy they're trying to use. Mm-hmm. Yes. What we want at the National Center for Public Policy Research, we want a coal-fired power plant built right next door to the Cupertino campus. That's what we want. And we want a coal-fired power plant built right next to every plant that makes anything Apple. Because these taxpayer-subsidized green energy, I mean, this is a passing fad. It can't be relied on. The sun might go out tomorrow, and then would we be, huh?
The National Center's complete shareholder resolution and Apple's response to it can be found on pages 62 and 63 of the company's proxy statement, which is available for download.
Well, it tells you a little bit about how what they thought of the National Center. So page 62 and 63.
Must be a lot of other proposals in front. When Cook introduced Apple's research kit, Tim Cook had another Tim Cook moment. He played to his progressive followers and said, "For those of you looking for ROI, there isn't one." To this, the liberal lemmings in the room cheered, said Danhoff. News Ninja Carol Baker, I didn't know Droopy Dog was a spokesman for the coal companies.
Yeah, it seems to fit.
Otherwise, I have to do the voice with, like, the drooling and the hissing and the hooting and the, you know, sort of evil, demonic sounding stuff. I'm just not up to it right now. Yeah. These people at the National Center for Public Policy Research are such a bunch of right-wing, profiteering, worshiping at the grave of Ayn Rand jackasses that But notice here how the National Center for Public Policy Research takes something, takes a statement about one thing and turns it into something else in order to fit it into their into their climate change denier format. When Cook introduced Apple's research kit, Tim Cook had another Tim Cook moment. So he was obviously speaking of research kit, and he said, for those of you looking for return on investment, there isn't one. There's no return on investment in research kit, whatever it is. I have no idea. He didn't say there was no return on investment for Apple stock, because it was just a few months back that the damn stuff split. This is isn't it true that Apple has the largest stash of cash of any corporation on earth? I mean, they're capitalized out the gazoo. That's part of what makes their stock so attractive. It got up to the point it was so expensive that's why stock splits happen. And now the stuff's going up again. But see, that doesn't satisfy the neo-maxi zoom dweebies of the National Center for Public Policy Research. Because they want return on investment with no renewable energy, damn it! Because it's a flash in the pan. Well, right, it's a flash in the sun. But you get our meaning. I mean, what are we going to do 4 billion years from now when the sun goes out and Apple can no longer use solar power? What are we going to do when the wind stops blowing and turning the blades of those wind turbines? What are we going to do? Apple will crash. You'll notice in here, however, that at no point, and this press release goes on and on and on. It reads like prose that Faulkner went ahead and threw into the fireplace.
Is Apple investing in green energy because it believes green energy is more important than profit? Or is it investing in renewable energy to greenwash its image and appease progressive environmentalists? We don't know the answer, but we'd like to.
Asa in Vancouver noting, yep, if there's only one company that doesn't know how to make a profit, it's Apple. Only $75 billion in Q4 profits. That's the fourth quarter. Whoop. And like I said, there's no paragraph in here that says, we are so disgusted with Apple, we are now going to sell all of our Apple stock, and we're never going to darken their doorway and bother them again. No! No! Would Apple be as profitable, do you think, if Tim Cook walked out on a stage and said, oh, just one more thing. All Apple products will now be made via electricity generated by coal-fired power plants, natural gas-fired power plants, nuclear power plants, and oil-burning power plants. No more of that icky old renewable technology for us. Thank you very much. Now, that's what would be fiduciarily stupid.
The National Center's...
The National Center's Free Enterprise Project is the nation's preeminent free market corporate activist group. In 2014, Free Enterprise Project representatives participated in 52 shareholder meetings, advancing free market ideas in areas of health care, energy, taxes, subsidies, regulations, religious freedom, food policies, media bias, gun rights, workers' rights, and many other important public policy issues. The National Center for Public Policy Research, founded in 1982, is a nonpartisan, free market, independent, conservative think tank. Let's analyze that. Founded in 1982, that's 1 year after Reagan takes office. Nonpartisan, liars, free market, bullshit, independent, not on your life, conservative, well, yeah. I mean, to the extent that they're probably somewhere to the right of Genghis Khan in their political leanings. Think tank. Well, I think we can probably say that they are, as long as we use a very, very broad definition of the word think. It receives over 350,000 individual contributions a year from over 96,000 active recent contributors.
Gee, I wonder if two of the names of those wee little itty-bitty individual contributors might be Chuck and Dave. Reckon the National Center for Public Policy Research are a bunch of cooksuckers? Because I'm not surprised. I wouldn't be surprised, would you?
Ron and Raleigh noting, hey, Bob, these assholes don't think over the years Apple hasn't sucked up enough profit? Goddamn greedy sons of bitches! Oh, no, there's plenty of profit there. They just wish that Tim Cook would stop trying to characterize Apple as a company interested in continuing to make profits into the 24th and a half century up there with the Dodgers. It's just downright unfree marketing to be using renewable energy, don't you know? See, that's one of those moments. The fact that they're attacking Apple for using renewable energy tells you everything you need to know about their free market bona fides. That's also what kind of maybe, sort of, perhaps leads you to think that maybe a couple of those contributions might have come from Chuck and Dave. Yeah, I know. Note coming in from Michael in Madison. Tim Cook, worst Ferengi ever? Or is there more to the story? Denouncing ROI is worse than denouncing your own mother. A statement like that would be treason on Ferengnar, unless Cook only said it to dupe those barbaric, profit-hating Federation do-gooders. That's them, the National Center for Public Policy Research, an independent, nonpartisan, conservative think tank. That's them. Federation do-gooders. Oh, I'm so glad it worked out the way it did, because see, I expect jackasses like the jackasses we have here in Appalachistan to say idiotic things like, well, you really can't trust that solar.
You can't trust that solar energy.
Or as Joe Manchin in his milk-smooth voice once put it, 100 years from now, solar energy might be the way that we get our power. But right now, we need coal. And of course, one of the problems, and the right wing did a lovely job of it, I must add. One of the problems that renewable energy faces is the fact that at one point in time, the Congress passed tax credits for the construction and installation of wind energy projects. Well, guess what? The Republican Congress, the Republican House in particular, went after those tax credits with its bloody fangs bared. And went a long way toward killing, or trying to kill, the nascent wind energy industry in this country. Because if it ain't fired by hydrocarbons, it ain't murkin'. Is that about the size of it? Is that how it plays out? It appears to. Yeah. Cute little exchange in the chat room. Lottie noting, every now and then somebody pulls the chain on the think tank and it empties. News Ninja Carol Baker said, now you know why I refer to them as stink tanks. No kidding. And they're all of them. The Competitive Enterprise Institute, the American Enterprise Institute, the Enterprise Institute, the Institute of Enterprising Institutes, the Heritage Foundation, the Hermitage Foundation, the Hooligan Foundation. They're all just covers for right wingers who don't want to work and want to sit around and draw their breath in their pay, and the more libertarian ones also want to smoke dope, right? And they're essentially dishonest. Why does Tim Cook hate prophets? Hey, Tim Cook probably also hates Jesus. Did you know he's gay? Is anyone here under the impression that that the Apple board of directors is a bunch of Chairman Treebeard and Secretary Treasurer Celery? Oh, dude, it's time for an Apple board meeting. Wait a minute. Hang on. I forgot my hockey sock. I love your tie-dye. That's awesome. Okay, let's go have a board meeting and talk about how much we have profits, okay? Kill. Apple is no less ruthless than any other American or global corporation. But they have, in a stroke of genius, and I remember reading this somewhere a while back, taken one of the nerdiest things on earth, the computer, and made it cool. And Microsoft was never able to do that. Microsoft took one of the nerdiest things on the planet and made it incredibly frustrating. Thanks, Bill. But from the iPhone to the iPad to the MacBook Air, iMac, and that really awesomely cool little, the Mac Pro? It looks like a garbage can. I mean, it looks like what happens when R2-D2 poops. They're just nifty little pieces of design. No matter how hard whoever programs Android tries, they can't make Android behave with the elegance that the iOS does. Android works fine. It's just kind of clunky and gross. And this is from me who has used both. Oh, exactly, Lottie. How did you know? Wow. Do Treebeard and Celery have you on, speed dial, dude? Lottie in the chat room just noted, Apple headquarters has skateboard racks outside instead of bike racks. That's exactly it, Mom. And there's you should see, the human hybrid trail up inside the boardroom. That is so cool. So I just thought I'd share that somewhere along the way. Ain't we got fun? Since we're talking about technology, at least peripherally. Ah, did you see what I did there? Peripherally? Ah. Then in parallel, we can talk about... Oh, peripheral? Parallel? Ooh-hoo! Of course, parallel ports don't even exist anymore, do they? Now, let's talk a little bit about the Internet, the interweb tubes. It's not a big truck. They still, I presume that the folks that are out there with the blowguns and the Thorazine darts are still on their dedicated search for Louis Gohmert to bring a little bit of peace and calm into his existence, but they haven't found him yet. This man who is so deeply concerned about the oppressed, asparagus in this country. Well, he's worried about the interweb tubes, too. And he had a sure enough hissy today. Or yesterday, rather. Now, understand that there is no hearing had in the House of Representatives that isn't called by some Republican, which means that it's called by some Republican for the purpose of assaulting the idea of, government, because... they hate them some government. So let us check in, shall we? Let us check in with a hearing held yesterday regarding net neutrality in the House of Representatives. The folks over at Travis Geddes over at Raw Story noting that it was the fifth time in 8 days that FCC, Federal or Funky Communications Committee Chairman Tom Wheeler, had to appear before Congress. Jesus, you'd think he lived in Benghazi or something. Now, the purpose of the testimony, Travis Geddes writes at Raw Story, was to discuss the Telecommunications Act of 1996. Now, you, I, we, our little horn family commune congregation, have roundly and soundly condemned the Telecommunications Act of 1996, insofar as it opened the floodgates to create the media monopolization that we now witness in the form of the right wing controlling virtually all media. It helped create Fox, for God's sakes. But the argument goes that the Telecommunications Act of 1996 also gives authority to the FCC to make sure that everybody has some degree of fairness and equal access to the all the stuff that's out there online now. That it isn't just turned into one long pop-up ad. Which it kind of has. Well, this was not... This did not sit well with the representative of downtrodden asparagus. Let's check in, shall we?
You just say Congress asked us to look at the rules. What from Congress asked the FCC to look at rules regarding the internet?
Wait, this is just precious. This is a hearing about FCC authority and the 1996 Telecommunications Act. And apparently, I don't know, are the rest of the Republicans just having one on at Louis's expense because he's just too damn dim to realize that everybody's laughing and that they're laughing at him? Because he just goes in and asks questions off the top of his strange, alienish little head. And he gets embarrassed. You'd feel bad for him if he was anybody but Louis Gohmert.
Congress asked us to look at the rules. What from Congress asked the FCC to look at rules regarding the Internet?
The 1996 Telecommunications Act.
Oh, so it was recent. That was 19 years ago. You seized on that to say Congress was asking you to look at the Internet 19 years later.
Has it been rescinded? Has it been struck down by the courts? Louis really doesn't have much in the way of a fundamental understanding of the continuing nature of law, which is kind of interesting for a fella that actually got through 3 years of law school, was handed a law degree, practiced law, and was then allowed to sit in judgment of other human beings from the bench. No highfalutin Harvard-style arguments here. This is just a brutally stupid cross-examination from a guy who makes Hamilton Berger on the old Perry Mason series look positively competent.
Telecommunications Act.
Oh, so it was recent. That was 19 years ago. You seized on that to say Congress was asking you to look at the Internet 19 years later. Well, I would submit to you that something in 1996 had nothing to do with wanting you to take charge of the Internet. And I would also thank you.
But wait, Louis. Oh, Louis! See, I know for a fact, because we've had the clips, all about how he's forever quoting of the Declaration of Independence that happened in 1776. So, Louis, you're saying that something that got wrote in 1776 allows you to stand around and suggest that in order to protect freedom, we've got to let little first graders get blown away into little pieces of first grader chutney at a Connecticut elementary school so that you can... Wolverines! Yeah. This is another moment when I know that there's no great big bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky with a handful of lightning bolts because, well, you ever seen grilled asparagus? Yeah. No, he hasn't been reduced to it.
You for your willingness to leave some room for exploratory business models and new business models. That's really so gracious of you.
What a prick. I mean, it's one thing to be stupid. It's another thing to be a prick. But to roll it all together and just be a great big giant stupid prick, well, that takes some talent. And Louis's our guy. Now, here's a guy who only has a paying job because there are enough morons in the 1st Congressional District of Texas to let him keep it. And he has the nerve to sit there, and you know what? I'm not going to pretend otherwise. Given the opportunity to talk to Mr. Wheeler, I would probably sit down and say, you know, I got some issues. I got a problem with the fact that, oh, you know, the FCC so thoroughly doesn't regulate the licenses that it grants and perpetuates, the bomb train can go off in a county in West Virginia, and none of the news stations, and the news station that exists in that county doesn't show up to cover it. And you don't give up. And you don't care if every station in the country is owned by Clear Freaking Channel, and there's nothing local anymore. You know, I was talking last night with Rick Hall about, you know, little 15-year-old pimply-faced kids who want to be a DJ. They don't exist anymore. Because driving across America, the music that you hear... All right, fair enough, Devin pointing out. Now, Bob, a prick would be part of a man. Point taken. Or not. I mean, but you can drive all across America, and you can think that you're listening to WASS Abilene, but you're actually listening to music that's being piped in via satellite from Charlotte, North Carolina. And there's nobody there. It's a little cinder block building with a tower outside and a computer. And an engineer drives by once a week to make sure everything's working. There used to be a public service aspect to radio, to TV. An actual requirement that the licensee, and these are the publicly owned airwaves, this is a completely different model, say, from what obtains in Great Britain, where, if I understand correctly, one buys a license to own a television set to access the stuff that's being broadcast. Well, here, we deem that the public, you, me, we, the people working on that more perfect union, that we own the airwaves, and that we graciously permit broadcasters to have a license to send stuff out over them. And, in effect, have a license to print money by selling advertisements. You see... But the Telecommunications Act of 1996 put an end to all of that. The end of the Fairness Doctrine in the 1980s, coupled with the Telecommunications Act of 1996, worked together to more or less utterly eliminate any notion of public service that broadcasting may have still had. But that's not this. The Telecommunications Act of 1996 was created when the Internet was a baby. And please, no mention of Al Gore. Please, just please. And law does convey authority. The Telecommunications Act of 1996 does not say this shall no longer be in effect as of January 1st, 1997. It doesn't. But Louis Gohmert is so goddamn dumb, so unutterably stupid, such a discredit to the idea of a couple of million years of human evolution. Well, is this willful stupidity, or is it the accidental kind? With Louis, you can't really tell, although you can hear from the snide and shitty kind of attitude that he strikes in asking these questions that he thinks he is a real freaking Solon who's gonna get Chairman Wheeler to admit that he did it, he killed Cock Robin with his little hatchet. Oh, God, it's annoying.
The Internet, and I would also thank you for your willingness to leave some room for exploratory business models and new business models. That's really so gracious of you.
Would it be okay? I mean, do you think he'd lose his job? Do you think Barack Obama would fire him if he just looked at Louis and said, you know, Louis, you're a dick? Then again, they'd probably have to find C-SPAN for Broadcasting Network, wouldn't they? Yeah, thank God this is the Internet, you know?
You dick!
Exactly. But it would be fun, wouldn't it?
Because before the FCC stepped in, everybody was able to explore new business models. The only difference is now you're playing God with the Internet, saying, I will decide. We'll leave some room for you to come up with new business models.
Does the member have a question? Apparently, Louis badly wants to be a senator so that he can just filibuster. What are these new business models he wants? Because what we're getting at here is that Louis hates the idea of net neutrality. Louis hates the idea of a fair and open internet where, you know, you don't have to pay extra to your ISP in order to have access to this program, or we don't have to pay some exorbitant cost to be able to have a 64 kbps pipe, you know, a little pissant pipe to deliver this to you. That's what's making Captain Asparagus angry. What a jackass.
That's not your job. The court said that in January 2014, and you can change the wording around, but it doesn't change the facts. And Congress is not asking you, was not asking you to take over the Internet. So I want to make that clear.
Because, obviously, Louis speaks for the entire Congress. Because, as Charlie Pierce notes, he is the Padishah Emperor for Life of the stupid people. I mean, at this point, he's hollering into the microphone. Kind of astonishing, really.
Models, that's not your job. The court said that in January 2014, and you can change the wording around, but it doesn't change the facts. And Congress is not asking you, was not asking you, to take over the Internet. So I want to make that clear. You find something in the last 4 years where Congress has passed it by elected officials of this country.
Well, we can't find much of anything in the last 4 years that's been passed by elected officials of this country, Louis, because you're part of a party that doesn't like to pass laws unless they happen to be about taking health care away from sick people or declaring that the twice elected, undeniably elected President of the United States is some sort of Kenyan Muslim usurper. Asshole.
And said, please take over the Internet, then that would be good evidence before this committee. But until that happens, some of us, most of us in the House and most of us in the Senate do not want you to decide who gets to develop a new business model and who cannot.
Which is convenient because Chairman Wheeler and the FCC have at no point in time decided who can and who cannot develop a new business model, unless by new business model you mean not allowing, say, Verizon or Frontier or Comcast or any of the other ISPs, unless you mean allowing them to basically become pirates, cyber pirates, who extract booty from the rest of us. Devin pointing out, every member of all three branches of government hates the internet. This is old news. Like I said, Thorn in the Side Thursday, we're probably going to be busy. Oh, Louie, Louie. No, no, I'm not going to bump out with that. I swear I'm not going to bump out with that. That's just too easy. Louie, Louie. No. So, where do we go? Well, thus ends the filibobster. That means the lines are open. You know what the, well, and I presume you know, but I always have to announce them just the same. You know what the numbers are. Harold is 304-574-8178. We used to call that the Skype line, but it confuses people. Harold is 304-574-8178. Maud is 304-663-4676. 304-663-HORN. We used to call that the Gizmo line. We still do, kind of. And we still call it the Skype line, kind of, too. But you don't have to have Skype. Hmm? Okay. Either one of those is fine. Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn, Bob Kincaid Horn. Email comes into BobKincaid@gmail.com. On Twitter, at Bob Kincaid. Bob Kincaid on Facebook. And, of course, there's always The Horn, Head On Radio Network, the private group that we maintain for the Horn Family Commune Congregation on Facebook as well. If you want to join up, send a request. I'll approve it, and you'll be right there. Let's see. Thanks going out. We are now... Hang on just a second. We are now only $80 away from meeting the fundraising goal for the evening. $80 away. Thank you, Michael. Thank you very kindly for kicking in this evening. That would be Michael in Illinois. Thank you. Steve with an email from New York City says, I get it! Since my student loans are now more than 4 years old, they've run out of enforceability. Woohoo! Man, it's the day of Jubilee, Steve. Yeah. So we'll take a little break. It's Thursday. That means the Green News Report is upcoming. Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. I always look forward to that. Let's see. Just trying to come up with a really kick-ass bumper, and it's not happening for me. Oh, why not? Might as well. Going back to the whole National Center for Public Policy Research thing. This is The Horn. Guess you got me in your spell. Wow. I think that I'll be all right.
It's Thursday, March 26, 2015.
Today, the global warming alarmists are the equivalent of the flat earthers.
Climate denier Ted Cruz compares himself to Galileo.
They are literally lying about climate change, but they keep getting funding.
Not anymore. BP breaks up with Alec. Texas town goes 100% renewable because it's cheaper. Plus,
what issue was that?
The issue that you mentioned earlier regarding.
Oh, Florida. State employees struggles with Governor Rick Scott's ban on the words climate change.
All of those hysterical stories and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comments.
We couldn't talk about why the water was getting hotter. At some point it was mentioned that sea level rise was to be referred to as nuisance flooding.
Ah, yes! Nuisance flooding! Moisture inconvenience. Statewide jacuzzification.
This is your Green News Report.
It appears 2020 Miami will be involved in a surprise pool party.
Okay, Dizzy Doyen, sometimes it's difficult to find the humor in all of this.
Not this week.
This is not one of those weeks. Exactly. I love this story out of Florida. But before we get to it, I know, speaking of hysterical,
yeah.
Ted Cruz.
Yep, Texas Republican Senator Ted Cruz, a prominent climate science denier who is now running for president in 2016. In an interview with the Texas Tribune, he compared himself to Galileo.
Today, the global warming alarmists are the equivalent of the flat earthers. You know, it used to be, it is accepted scientific wisdom, the earth is flat, and this heretic named Galileo was branded a denier.
Okay, so first, it was not scientific wisdom, it was church doctrine. Galileo didn't deny science, he denied church doctrine.
So Cruz has this all backwards.
Straight out of the denier playbook. It's called the Galileo Gambit. But, you know, he is getting a lot of attention for his blatant science denial this week.
And yes, thanks to you, and giving it to him.
Well, I think he's probably also getting a lot of campaign donations from all the people who are fooled by the science denial industry. And now in Florida, Florida's Republican Governor Rick Scott is still insisting that there is no official ban against state employees saying the words climate change or global warming. Yet, in the state legislature, Florida's Director of Emergency Management, Brian Kuhn, really tried hard to do just that.
Brian Kuhn, Director of Florida FEMA, is speaking to a legislator in the Florida State Senate. And he's tying himself into knots trying to not say climate change.
Are you familiar with the new procedures that FEMA issued just this week dealing with climate change?
My understanding is at this point is it will require that future versions of our mitigation plan will be required to have language discussing that issue.
What issue was that?
The issue that you mentioned earlier regarding.
And everyone, all of the legislators, just start cracking up at this guy who won't say the word climate change. Just a few days ago, we covered a story in which a Florida official did say climate change. And what happened to him?
He was suspended and ordered to undergo a psychiatric evaluation.
Unbelievable what is going on down in Florida right now.
It looks like climate change could be a thing in the 2016 presidential elections after being ignored in the 2012 presidential election.
For now, the mainstream media are holding feet to the fire. They seem to be reporting on Ted Cruz denialism and what's going on down in Florida. So this is, let's call it a positive development?
Yeah, and more positive developments. The rest of the world seems to be ignoring Republicans. Oil giant BP this week became the third major fossil fuel company to sever ties with ALEC, the right-wing American Legislative Exchange Council that works to block climate change policy at the state level. More good news. China's capital of Beijing is breaking up with coal and will shut down all of its remaining coal plants within the year, switching instead to cheaper, cleaner natural gas.
Wow, not crazy about natural gas, but it's better than coal.
And in the U.S., the coal industry is in terminal decline, according to energy analysts, as power plants switch to cheaper, cleaner natural gas. Bloomberg reports that at least 24 U.S. coal companies have gone bankrupt in the last 3 years.
And the ones that haven't their market value is down more than 80%.
France is going green with green roofs. New legislation requires all new roofs on all new commercial buildings to install either solar panels or green roofs with gardens because it reduces energy costs. In the heart of oil country, in Texas, the city of Georgetown is going 100% renewable, getting all of its energy from a local solar farm because city officials say solar is cheaper and less volatile than fossil fuel prices. But beating them all is Costa Rica, which has been running on 100% renewable energy since December, using primarily hydroelectric power.
Some unusually good and or funny green news today. Thank you, Desi Doyen. For much more on all of the stories we covered and the ones we couldn't get to, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
It's hard not to love that clip. Of course, we had it last night. Hi, this is the Horn. We are at the halfway point of this evening's Thorn in the Side Thursday program. I'm Bob Kincaid, and a quick note for anybody interested in such things. Yes, I was having a snack during the break. I was, I admit it. Last night, Jim pointed out that not all things coming out of South Carolina are terrible, like the lady who was screaming of it. That communist dictator tried to blow up a nuclear device in Charleston. Kenyans. Right. No, I'm sorry. Kenyans. Got to do the accent with that. No, not all things. I ran across something at the up to the Wiggling Pig that I don't know if you can get it where you are, but I highly we all know that I am powerless over cheese and my life has become unmanageable, right? I found a brand of pimento cheese spread called Palmetto Cheese Spread with Jalapenos, the pimento cheese with soul. Keep refrigerated, gluten-free, Pauly's Island specialty foods, and it is yummy. A little bit of sourdough toast. So I guess that's our unpaid endorsement and food porn portion for the evening. That was my snack. Note coming in from Robert in Australia. Here in Australia, television and radio licenses is the subject line. Here in Australia, we used to have radio and television licenses. The money raised went to paying for the ABC, the Australian Broadcasting Corporation, the publicly owned commercial-free Australian radio and television network. The need for a license was ended in 1974 when the Labor government of the time decided to fund the ABC from general revenue instead. Average cost back then was about 8 cents per day per Australian. I think it's around 10 or 12 cents a day per Australian by now. Local radio is still in effect in major cities and country towns. Television is networked based on time zones with local news and current affairs shows in each state. And we also have commercial stations if you want to watch a load of old dingo kidneys of the reality programming type from the USA. Never heard of that referred. Never heard of Survivor referred to as dingo kidneys, but by God, it fits! Well, they're cheap, says Robert, and fill up the space between commercials. As I understand it, the UK system, the license fee pays for the BBC directly, rather than the system we have in Australia. Considering the quality and amount of programming material that the BBC makes, especially science programming, I think it's money well spent, and I share your opinion, Robert. P.S. Ted Cruz should do well with all the flat earthers on YouTube. It's unbelievable how dumb these people are. But they are. Oh, God, they are. Nice little group in the Horn chat room this evening. Good evening, as noted before, to Barbie. Good evening, Anatole and Blake and Madison. Good evening, News Ninja Carol Baker, Devin, Gerald, Kathy, Kelly, Mr. Gibson, Stockton Larry, and the Hackloin Princess. Good evening, one and all, if you'd like to jump in and be part of the fun and carrying on and general merrymaking. The chat room is free and easy. Just go to headonradionetwork.com/chatroom. Pick yourself out a screen name and a password, and you'll be right in the thick of things. Oh, where do we start? Oh, hey, how about a little visit, being as how this is Thorn in the Side Thursday after a we-didn't-have-one prayer meeting Wednesday. How about we check in on the, well, that didn't take long, department.
Welcome to the 700 Club. It is a mystery that no Fishkin writer would write. What happened to that?
Wait, the Aricept ain't working, is it? Is it, Marion? A Fishkin writer? Fishkin. Was he one of those lesser Russian poets? I mean, Pushkin, Fishkin? Maybe not. That's just too good.
Welcome to the 700 Club. It is a mystery that no Fishkin writer would write. What happened to that plane that crashed into the French Alps? Well, they've begun to find out. The pilot went to the laboratory and was soon locked out of the cockpit. He pounded on the door begging to come in, but the door was not opened. The co-pilot then...
Behold, he stood at the door and knocked, but no one opened the door unto him. Hey, by the way, before we go back to former liquor supply officer Marion Robertson, a note from Gerald. Bob, I'd call in to chat, but like you, I am powerless over cheese. Currently, I'm enjoying a grilled cheese sandwich and some home-cooked chicken noodle soup. Sorry, but priorities, you know. Oh, I do. Just try to get through this clip without spit-taking homemade chicken noodle soup all over your monitor, and you can consider yourself ahead of the game, Gerald. It was a Fishkin writer. It was a story no Fishkin writer would ever write. What? Edith? Huh? Fletcher. Fishkin, fiction, Fletcher, Felcher. Whatever. And behold, the pilot stood at the door and knocked, but no one... never mind. That just doesn't work. Let's get back to Marion. At 28 minutes before the hour of 8 p.m., here in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone, hockey puck warning. You didn't put it away, did you? Sort of pull it out, because you probably got bite marks in it from Louie. Rotate it around, get a good fresh bite, retape it in. You're going to want it. Because remember, this is the department of, well, that didn't take long.
Pit. He pounded on the door begging to come in, but the door was not opened. The co-pilot then takes the plane, pushes it into a dive, and crashes it. The passengers are screaming as the plane went down. The pilot is yelling. The voice recorder have got it all.
I have to note, since this is video, I have to note that we cannot see Pat's hands. And he sounds like he's getting a little bit wrought. Describe. The passengers were screaming. Pat, you're enjoying this a little too much, buddy. I think I'd rather have Don Lemon asking someone if a black hole could have been sucked. Oh, dear God.
And went down. The pilot is yelling. The voice recorder have got it all on tape. What a terrible tragedy. Was that co-pilot a Muslim?
Like I said, that didn't take long, did it?
Was that co-pilot a Muslim? Was he suicidal? What was it about him? He had 630 hours flying experience, which isn't a whole lot. He's 28 years old, and all the...
And he doesn't have Jesus.
Those people are dead, Terry.
That's right. Well, that's all we know about him at the moment is that he was 28. His name is Andreas Lubitz. He's a German, a flight enthusiast, and had just won an award for his flying skills. It's a mystery.
Well, we mourn the death of those people who died in that crash, but what a...
No, you don't. Don't lie. Lightning bolt? No lightning bolt. Further proof that we live in a godless world. Not a world that's rejected God, just a world in which God doesn't exist. Because, right there, the minute he lied like that, but no. Yeah, I know, Gerald. Andreas? Sounds awful Muslim-y to me, Gerald says. Maybe the ISIL had took over his mind with their... ISIL head-lopping mind control.
kite enthusiast and had just won an award for his flying skills. It's a mystery.
Well, we mourn the death of those people who died in that crash, but what a terrible thing. And you just, well, we'll find out what happened to him. Was he just psychotic? What was it? What was it? Why would he want to kill all those people? But he did.
And again, even I noted that it is, that theory remains theory pending the development of further hard evidence. And not theory like in gravity is a theory. It's a theory that the co-pilot took the plane down. But okay, so here's another mystery. Yes, former liquor supply officer Marion Robertson does ask, was he mentally ill? Was he depressed? But the first question he asks, was he a Muslim? Why didn't Marion ask, was he a Christian? Why didn't he ask, was he Jewish? Why didn't he ask, was he a Hindu? Was he a Buddhist? Was he Jain? Was he a Muslim? Andreas Lubitz? Yeah, that's a really, really old Muslim name, Andreas Lubitz. You know what now the internet goes all around the world. But you know what I hope? Because I do try to maintain a healthy storehouse of compassion and exercise both empathy and sympathy from time to time. I hope none of the people who are grieving the loss of loved ones aboard that flight ever have to see this filthy old man, this dirty old hypocrite, uttering these words. I think back to when he and the now roasting in hell Jerry Falwell, I think back to when they were muttering and mumbling about how lesbians made planes crash into the buildings on 9/11. And I think of the horror. I mean, out of 3,000 people killed, you reckon there were a couple of gay folks in there? I'm way past certain there were. And the pain that this follower of Christ deliberately inflicts on people. If you're Muslim, how much does it hurt, do you suppose? Every time something bad goes wrong, to have some right-wing piece of shit like Marion Robertson wonder whether the cause of it was a Muslim. When the fact of the matter is, billions of Muslims arise every day and go to sleep every night, never violate anybody's rights, never harm anybody, and never even think about harming anyone. But just as is with the case with Christianity, there is a minority, a loud and dangerous minority, that gets up every day dreaming of harm, dreaming of control, dreaming of authority, dreaming of power, dreaming of murder, and goes to sleep that night with the same dreams. Being as this plane crash is being investigated by both German and French authorities, and probably Spanish too, because the flight originated in Barcelona, I have a feeling they'll probably get to the bottom of it. There'll be a fingerprint left somewhere in the interweb tubes. There will be things that, because so far people asking questions about Andreas Lubitz have received, you know, quiet, smart, well-mannered, blah, 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 you know, nothing to point to. No. News Ninja Carol Baker noting, was he muslin? That makes shit up out of whole cloth. See what I did there? Yeah, I did. Muslin, whole cloth. Arr. Just like that bumper sticker. Mean people suck. Well, see, there's that. Jay Cruzen with an email. Hey, was the co-pilot's voice on the tape? Maybe he suffered a massive coronary and slumped over the controls. Just saying, Marion. Yeah, that's not the only possible answer, the one being posited by the French investigator and reprinted by people like the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times. Mean people. Mean people. Mean people. Like, like 37-year-old James Street of Missouri. James Street went to pump gas down to the Rippy Mart, according to a story in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. James Street went to pump him some gas down to the Rippy Mart and was pulling up to the pump at about the same time as a 54-year-old man of color. And, well, you know where this is going, don't you? 37-year-old James Street, well, they both went to the same pump. The older man, the black man, backed up his vehicle and went to another pump. The white guy, 37-year-old James Street, pulled on past the pump and went into a parking space. That's when he jumped out of his car and started screaming racial slurs at Kurt Ford. Kurt Ford is 54 years old. Kurt Ford once played baseball for the St. Louis Cardinals Baseball Club. 37-year-old James Street begins screaming racial slurs, goes into the store. And then as Kurt Ford is walking, I almost said Kurt Flood, sorry. As Kurt Ford was walking into the store to pay for his gas, James Street, a white guy, was leaving and walked up to Kurt Ford and just punched him in the face. Screaming at Kurt Ford, "Go back to Ferguson, you nigger." Kurt Ford was hard-pressed to describe what happened because his face was all swollen up and he wasn't able to speak very well. But when he was able to express himself, he said simply, "I'm going to let the authorities handle this situation, but I've had enough of St. Louis." 37-year-old white guy James Street has been charged with one count of assault motivated by discrimination in the third degree. God damn! What kind of discrimination do you have to manifest beyond screaming that word in order to get it up to second degree? Really? Has the world gone mad? No, just the United States, it seems. Sometimes it's just a little tough when you go back into the swamp. But there's more. Oh, wait, of course, there's more. Yeah. You know what? In fact, I had a note from Greg in Talibandiana the other day talking about this new statute that has been passed by the Talibandiana legislature, and which that man of courage, Mike Pence, then signed into law. It is a Religious Freedom Restoration Act. And, of course, this Religious Freedom Bill has nothing to do with it. It merely allows people to engage in bigotry under the color of law. Where have we heard that concept before? Oh, I know. And in point of fact, I was reading the other day, and I knew this, but I didn't know the particulars. This country has wrestled with this issue before. You know, bigots trying to hide behind religion in order to make the claim that my religion requires me to hate people. For God, so I can go to heaven. In point of fact, there was a string... Sorry, it's what it is. There was a string of barbecue joints in South Carolina stand back in the day, as the young hip kids say. The Porky's Pig Pickin' Palace or some such catchy name. And the owner said of that place back then said, that he would not seat people of color in his restaurant because his religion taught him that the black race was inferior to the white race. Now, God did not say he could not make a nickel, make any money off black folks. They just had to get their meals to go and go eat amongst the other niggers. Really. And the heart and soul and very essence of this nasty old bigots, and the place still exists. I can't remember the name of the business. But the very essence, the only thing upon which the argument was made that he ought not have to serve people of color was that his religion compelled him. You know, in other words, hey, we remember this phrase. He had a deeply held religious belief that said that black people ought not be allowed to sit down and eat a meal in his barbecue joint. No irony there, being as how black folks probably invented barbecue in the first place. But yeah. And so, in Talibandiana, history is repeating itself. Only this time, in place of, we don't have to serve you black people, you colored people, it's, we ain't got to serve you homosexual people. Now, there are some nuances here. Just as there were back in the days of Jim Crow. There were people who were deemed legally black who were pale enough to pass for white, and that was the phrase, that was the term. They were passing and availing themselves of the privileges of the white world and hiding, if you will, hiding their blackness. Yeah. Well, one supposes that one could go into a business in Talibandiana, now that this has been signed into law, now that the government of Talibandiana has bought itself a few million dollars worth of legal fees in defending the suit, the lawsuit that must surely be filed and will most assuredly find its way up to the Supreme Court. Well, I mean, it's not a lead pipe cinch, but I'd take even money on it. It is conceivable that, and I will not presume to speak for the gay community because I'm not a member of it. I'm merely an ally. But it is conceivable that one could be gay and doing, and as long as one did not go into a gay-hating business in Talibandiana screaming, "I'm gay! I'm gay!" or anything like that, that one would still presumably be served. However, it's kind of hard to hide one's gayness when one is trying to get a wedding cake because one is marrying, when a guy is marrying another guy or a woman marrying another woman. This is Talibandiana. This is a whole bunch of the rest of Merca in the second half of the second decade of the 21st century. One wonders what kind of moral courage Governor Mike Pence has. Hint, none. But it's apparently it's having consequences. There is a cloud computing company by the name of Salesforce, and the CEO of Salesforce is Mark Benioff. He tweeted earlier today. "Today, we are canceling all programs that require our customers' employees to travel to Indiana to face discrimination. Attention, tech CEOs, industry. Pay attention to what is happening in Indiana and how it will impact your employees and customers. Calling other tech CEOs and tech industry leaders to please take a stand." And, of course, there will be much pissing and moaning and manifestation of the ever-present persecution complex that terminates and stays resident inside of evangelical fundamentalist Christianity about how they're being persecuted for their belief in the Lord Jesus Christ and how he hated the homos. When that was the very same argument mounted 50 years ago by a vile, filthy old racist restaurateur in South Carolina. And then didn't Lester Maddox in Georgia also hold maintain a restaurant? And didn't he rise to some sort of infamy over the fact that he carried around a baseball bat or an axe handle or something, saying that he would beat to death any person of color who dared to try to sit down in his restaurant, because the Lord Jesus Christ, the Prince of Peace, commands me that they are a lesser people. All because of some stupid story about the goings-on of Shaman Ham and Meatloaf or something in the Old Testament. Oh, wait, that wasn't Meatloaf, that was bacon. Japheth. Meanwhile, the NCAA, which is already locked into holding the Final Four, and I'm trying to constrain my excitement, at about 9:45 p.m., my beloved West Virginia Mountaineers will take on the heavily favored Kentucky Wildcats in the Sweet 16 in Cleveland. The Final Four is going to be held in Indianapolis, and the NCAA is kind of stuck. Now, I think it would be profound if, say, one of the Final Four teams, said, sorry, we're not going to play in Indiana. We refuse. We absolutely will not play in a state that harbors and, in fact, celebrates discrimination. So while the NCAA is stuck, they did issue a press release, and you're going to be hard-pressed to find me bestowing a lot of love on the NCAA. I mean, Jesus, this is a multi-billion dollar nonprofit. Ah! Means they don't pay taxes. That makes all of its money on the backs of unpaid student athletes. Nonetheless, the NCAA, credit where credit is due, the NCAA did say, the NCAA National Office and our members are deeply committed to providing an inclusive environment for all our events. We are especially concerned about how this legislation could affect our student athletes and employees. We will work diligently to assure student athletes competing in and visitors attending next week's Men's Final Four in Indianapolis are not impacted negatively by this bill. Moving forward, we intend to closely examine the implications of this bill and how it might affect future events as well as our workforce. I think you could actually be stronger. Mark Emmert, president of the NCAA, you could be stronger. You could say, look, we're never coming back to Indiana. At all. We may even refuse to allow membership in the NCAA by any school inside the borders of Calabandiana as long as this bill is on the books. And there is blowback growing. Talking Points memo reports a number of businesses warned that there could be blowback to the governor signing the legislation. Gen Con, a major tabletop gaming convention, threatened to pull its convention out, but its contract isn't up until 2020. Actor-activist George Takei, NBA star Jason Collins, and the Eli Lilly Company, one of the state's largest employers, have all spoken out against the law. You know, there is a way to fix this. Quick. Here within the Horn Family Commune congregation, many of us have seen, most of us have seen the life of Brian and the great crucifixion scene, where the centurion walks up to the crosses and says, "All right, who here is Brian of Nazareth?" And Graham Chapman, of course, says, "I'm Brian." And then Eric Idle says, "I'm Brian." And another python hanging on a cross says, "I'm Brian." And another one says, "I'm Brian, and so is my wife." Until everybody getting crucified on that hill is screaming that they're Brian of Nazareth. This tactic would work in Talibandiana. All you have to do is have a bunch of people committed to non-discrimination walk into a restaurant and say, "Hi, we need a table for eight, and we're all gay." And the people behind them say, "Table for two, we're gay." And the people, "Table for four, gay. I'm just going to sit at the bar, but I'm gay." "Well, we won't serve you. Or maybe it works a different way. You walk in, "We've got a party of eight, but we've got a gay person with us, and, you know, gosh, you live in a state that just sanctioned discrimination. Where were you when the legislature was doing this? Where were you? Why aren't you out in the streets? Why aren't you dialing Mike Pence? Why don't you have Mike Pence on speed dial? Where's the Chamber of Commerce of Talibandiana? You know, the Chamber of Commerce in a Republican-dominated state can get just about anything done it wants done. Where was the Chamber of Commerce on this goddamn bill? Keith Olbermann went so far as to suggest that sports leagues should abandon Indiana entirely. That means no more Indianapolis Colts, no more Indiana Pacers. No more whatever minor league ball is in Indiana. Didn't Indianapolis used to have Indianapolis used to have the AAA club of the Cincinnati Reds? Didn't they? And what's interesting is we're talking here about business. And Repiglickens just love them some business. I mean, witness the conniption thrown 16 days ago by the National Center for Public Policy Research over something that Tim Cook said that wasn't about anything that they were talking about, you know, because they're liars. But they only love business so long as business is done according to their whims. This is easily enough fixed. Mike Pence could have vetoed the damn bill. I mean, it's bad enough that the Talibandiana legislature is a bunch of thugs and cretins and creeps, right-wing evangelical fundamentalists and the lot. But Mike Pence had the ability to stop it in its tracks and make them at least override his veto. Profiles in courage, huh? Yeah. Fun. Isn't it? Bigotry. At least it gives us something to talk about, right? So we shall see if the power of the power of the purse is greater than the power of the bigot. Because if this isn't stopped here, well, it's already The fact that it's become enshrined in law in even one state in this country means that it is a disease that is, in fact, metastasizing. So I think maybe we'll take a little break. God, the bumper is just not this. This was just easy. I just have to find it. Because, I mean, this is just perfect. Take a second. Here we go. I love it when things work out nicely. Oh, darn it. Please call back. For some reason or another, the gizmo line disconnected itself. We'll get that remedied. There we go. All better. So try back. Yeah. Oh, and thanks going out. We are thanks to Glenn And thanks to James. Wow. We are finished with fundraising for this evening and started on tomorrow. We now have only $130 to go for tomorrow's fundraising. Thank you very kindly, James. It's huger than you know, indeed. So light up the phones, 304-574-8178, if you wish, or that's Harold, 304-663-4676, that's Maud, the gizmo line. Either way is fine. This is Conversation Radio for A Thorn in the Side Thursday. I'm Bob Kincaid. I'm so proud of myself. I still want to write a song parody of this, complete with police bullhorns in the background saying, "We know you're a homosexual. Come out of that restaurant. We know you are. Step away from the wedding cake and come out with your hands up." Yeah. R. Dean Taylor. R. Dean Taylor. Indiana wants me. God, who wants Indiana, though? Ick. And that's true, Stockton Larry pointing out in the chat room. Indiana. Today's fun fact, the state with the biggest KKK Klan membership ever. Yeah. And the Hackling Princess in the chat room pointing out, it's expected the Arkansas Senate will take up a version of this tomorrow. Do please. Hold on here. Having have problems keeping connected. There, we're all better now, I think. Yes, good. Keep us posted on what happens in the Arkansas legislature, would you please, Haley? Over to the Gizmo line, otherwise known as Maud, and it is the marvelously coherent Diane in Kansas. Stan, hey Diane, are you
on the Maud line? Okay.
Well, you know, I inadvertently named the Skype line Harold, just because it seemed like a hand. And then Marty chimed in and said, does that mean the other line's Maud? So I guess that means it is.
Right. I recall this. What a strange movie that was, by the way.
Yes, it was.
I mean, most of the time I'm aware of my feelings after watching a provocative movie. I had no idea how I felt after watching that movie.
Isn't that absolutely the truth?
Ooh.
So are you back safely in Kansas, Stan, or are you still stuck in Rochester?
Oh, thanks for asking. I'm back safely in Kansas, Stan. That's the third time United has had a delay of a day, and in this case, two, getting me out of Rochester. That's 3 out of 3.
Oh, my God.
I know. I mean, they said, the representative said it was weather, and Monday, I know Chicago weather was bad. It was bad. At least that's what my weather app was showing me. But 3 out of 3 is not good. I don't think I can get back to Kansas from New York necessarily going through O'Hare. I think I should fly south and then up. This is what I'm thinking. Maybe through, I don't know where. Atlanta, I guess. I don't know. But anyway.
And doesn't it just feel silly even saying that you've got to fly to New York from Kansas via Atlanta? I mean, I understand the whole hub concept, but really? That's just mind-blowing.
Well, I remember when U.S. Air moved their hub out of Pittsburgh.
I was about to say the very same thing.
Yeah, that was a bad day. I mean, I don't know how Pittsburgh lost U.S. Air. I don't know. After that whole nice international airport.
That airport is gorgeous.
Oh, it's a great airport. That's the first time I've been able to get massage in an airport, you know. Now it's not so unusual, but Pittsburgh had a little massage counter. Or not counter, but whatever. You know, take
kiosk,
a little chair.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, O'Hare has a yoga room.
Oh, my God, speaking of yoga rooms.
Yeah?
I don't know if you're familiar with this or if you've seen this story or not. But, okay, so a week or so ago, I had the story of how the Florida police let a woman off. This woman just went and destroyed the satanic Christmas display. And I know that seems kind of oxymoronic saying that, but who cares? You know, because Florida wants to recognize religion in the public square. So that meant the Satanists got to put up their satanic Christmas display. And a woman went and destroyed it. She was charged with a crime, destruction of property. And then the Florida authorities, the prosecutor, said, no, we're just going to let her off because she's a Christian.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Well,
what does a satanic Christmas display look like anyway?
In this case, I think it showed Lucifer's fall from grace or something.
Oh, so it had an angel. An angel of note.
Right. I mean, Lucifer was not just any old garden variety coming off the bench, pine polish, an angel. He was the bringer of freaking light, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's Florida. So we'll just stay in the South and move west 1,000 miles or so to Texas. And this is a Boosie TV. It's the story of Nancy Duarte, 41 years old, calls herself Suzanne, which reminds me of a Beatles song. What is it? See Raccoon. Her name was McGill, but she called herself Lil, and everyone knew her as Nancy.
Right.
Right. Okay, so her name is Nancy Duarte, and she goes by Suzanne. He went to American Power Yoga with a baseball bat and a can of gasoline and a store, I guess. Because she said that it was, she was setting it on fire, destroying it to get rid of the devil's temple, which immediately reminded me of Pat Robertson. You gotta wonder if she's a fan. Remember Pat Robertson a couple of weeks ago, Diane, talking about how when you're doing your yoga and you're saying Kali, Kali, which nobody doing yoga does, by the way, Kali Bar, Hanan Shavai, Hanan Shavai, and the hearts are popping out, that you're calling on the devil. So, yeah, she went to American Power Yoga to set fire to it and did set fire to it and said she was getting rid of the devil's temple.
Oh, my God. I've been practicing yoga for years. It's now just kind of second nature. I go, no, it's not a big deal. I mean, it probably sounds a little hard, but Pittsburgh, I studied yoga with a master from India, the subcontinent India, and me as opposed to saying I studied with Ian.
Or indeed in Indiana.
Right. Oh, no, I don't think that'll ever happen. I can't, and he could not speak English, and he was a renunciate. So several of us would just climb the stairs into his apartment, which had no furnishings and nothing in it, and he would guide us through poses. And then he didn't take money, so we would leave offerings on the mantle of his fireplace. I mean, really, when you think about it, pretty close to the real thing of service, right?
Yeah, right, yeah. As long as you weren't showing up and he was skyclad, I'd be a little uncomfortable with skyclad.
Skyclad? What's that?
That's your really, really serious Indian holy man who has renounced everything, including clothing.
Oh, yeah. Some of them are, I mean, we were always in the ashram I used to go to in the Catskill Mountains. We saw pictures of some of them, and we were told, well, they woke up, and so they just sat naked on garbage heaps. Of course, that would make all the Westerners among us very afraid, because we don't want to end up that way.
No.
In this society, my God. And I'm making light of it, but really, my understanding is in India, there's some cultural space for just, you know, at least leaving people like that alone, and in some cases, taking care of them with reverence. Here, just can't imagine what would, I can't imagine what would happen. I mean, I was just thinking how Topeka dumped out its mentally ill onto the street when Menninger's clinic left. And, of course, Reagan caused that to happen. And who knows among those people, you know, what's really going on with them, if you know what I mean.
Right, sure.
I mean, in another culture, they might be shamans. I really don't know. I just know that in this society, I wouldn't want to end up sitting on a garbage heap, an awakened being. No. But anyway, Bob, talking about looking a page a few minutes ago, I don't know if I mentioned to you that Sam Brownback.
Oh, I had to scream the other day, Diane. It was when Wichita State and Kansas were playing the round of two in the tournament.
Oh, yeah.
And
I act like I know. I don't know.
Wichita State beat Kansas like Kansas owed them money. It was deemed to be. I mean, the two seed was what, a 8 or 9 seed, and Wichita State didn't just beat them; they thrashed them.
Okay. Wow.
And so lo and behold, the reason I interrupted you is I wanted to scream because lo and behold, the camera cuts over to Sam Brownback, who is, you know, he's such a weasel that he can't, you know, he can't just show up in street clothes. No. He's got to be a damn politician, Diane. So he's got a shirt on that has both the Shocker and the Jayhawk mascot on it, like he was rooting for both teams. You know, somebody's got to lose, right?
But if he has the Jayhawk on, he's not even rooting for Kansas State because we have.
No! Kansas. It was Kansas, not K-State. Kansas and Wichita State.
This is how little I know about what's going on. I heard something about Wichita. And Kansas and I thought it was a game with Kansas State. I didn't even know what kind of game. I'm blissfully unaware. But it doesn't mean, like I said before, that I don't think other people should enjoy it. I'm just indifferent, you know? So it was KU.
Yeah, it was KU.
What game? Sorry to be so out of it. But what game? Basketball?
Because it was hoops.
Basketball. Well, KU is known for basketball around these parts.
Yes, so that's why it was such a... Woo! You know.
Yeah. Often I heard about that in New York. So they must have been played last weekend or something.
Well, it was, and it was a huge upset.
Yeah. Kansas, KU is, I mean, the little I know about it, I know that when we play KU in basketball, we're not going to win. And, like, I don't care. I don't want to sound hostile. I'm just explaining why I'm...
Oh, no. I understand completely.
I mean, and one reason, I'm staying that way on purpose, and I'll tell you why. Because in Pittsburgh with the sports, I kind of got mildly interested because I taught at the downtown campus and because my dad played semi-pro ice hockey, which would be, I'm told, the equivalent of the real thing these days. He played for the Chicago,
Blackhawks, Chicago Hockey.
Yeah. And I still have his, he passed away 3 years ago. I have his skates hanging in my closet, you know, nice leather.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah. When my dad passed, I wanted. And someone else has his hockey stick and hockey puck.
Oh,
I'd be biting on it most of the time.
Well, Bill's a big hockey fan. Bill's probably out there going, oh, my God, you're kidding, right?
Yeah, my dad was incredible, I'm told. When I was a little girl... Well, for one thing, his family called him back because my family at the time had Svenson Construction Company, and they built most of the viaducts out here on I-70. They built a lot of the, like, City Hall and Kansas City Baptist Memorial Hospital, Sunshine Biscuit Company, you know, dorms, and they were sort of a thing. And they called my dad back, you know, from playing semi-pro ice hockey to the business. So that was the end of that. But when I was a little girl, he would take me to a pond, a small lake that had iced over, or just a rink, and he'd sit me on a bench, and he'd go out and skate.
What a memory, Diane.
You know, he's a full-blooded Swede because my grandparents both came from Stockholm, 6'3". Looked like Rock Hudson. I'm serious. What a handsome man. And then to see him on the ice like that. And then he'd come sit by me and tell me, after he skated like that, he would tell me how he had to knock the teeth out of Canadians in the locker room. You know, I mean, he would just say all candidly, like, this is part of what happened. And I remember distinctly being five thinking, my dad is like a swan. His last name is, you know, our last name is Swanson, sorry. But I was thinking, he's like a swan. So, you know, whatever my five-year-old mind had words for grace, you know, and beauty. And then he beats up people in the locker room. And I remember distinctly thinking, men must be very interesting. I thought, you know, holding those two things in one's mind, and but anyway, back to Brownback by May, and you've just given me a picture.
And I'm sorry to have diverted you that way.
No, it's about Brownback, so there's no, I mean, in fact, a diversion might be the thing to do, but, I mean, you've painted a picture of the camera, you know, panning him, and him being, I mean, how strange is that to wear both insignias or whatever he was wearing? He looks like an agent from the Matrix, that rubbery look. He's getting more and more rubbery looking. And I was looking at an article before I called you, and I might have mentioned this before, but it was reported by the Associated Press when he was a senator in Washington, it was reported by the Associated Press and the Topeka Capital Journal that he had a foot washing ceremony where he washed the feet of one of his favorite staffers who was leaving. You know, you were talking about Republican governors, I think, before.
Oh, and the Crisco and the anointing and the foot washing and the...
Oh, but, you know, he has a temerity to worry about gays. Well, he does that in the... I had a picture in my mind. What would happen to society if everyone in centers of power did this? Took off their socks and shoes and had... and washed each other's feet. I mean, I'm not looking at that as... I mean, I know it was written up like it's a very Christ-like gesture and humbling and all, but this one professor of political science commented on it, and his name was Layman. I mean, the goddess of irony, right?
Yeah, right.
And he's like, well, I've never heard of it.
What? But see, this is one of those things. This is one of those things that gets carried over from the ancient world that just drives me crazy. You know why they washed feet back then?
For lice? I don't know.
Because they were filthy.
Yeah.
Because they didn't have running water. Because they were barbarians. Because they lived in a freaking miserable desert. Yeah. But somehow now it's a manifestation of Christliness. Well, yeah, I mean, to that end, so is bathing.
Yeah, but, Bob, I'm thinking the weirdness of it in terms of turning the purpose of it into something that wasn't meant to be. That's bad enough. But what about all these men washing each other's feet? I mean, that doesn't seem reasonable to me.
Yeah, it's a little fetishy, isn't it?
Yeah, thank you. Like a episode I saw once on Sex and the City. Yes, that's where I'm getting some of my education in this, Sex and the City.
There's a little element of, you know, Deliverance-esque, sure do got a purty mouth about all the Christian foot washing, right?
Well, that's why I'm wondering how he has the standing to comment on gays. Or anything, really. But
that's because Brownback is the worst kind of Christian. He was a fundamentalist, and then he saw the light and converted to Roman Catholicism. And I know a lot of people whose family have been Roman Catholic for, you know, generation, a bit, thousands of years for all I know. And they say, you know the worst kind of Catholic, the brand new one.
Well, and that's a little bit even scary, because think of all the things he did as a Christian where he justified it by saying, well, this is what the Bible said, you know, this absolutist rendering of what we all need to do, because he knows. But then apparently he didn't really know, because he changed to something that's different in its fundamentalism. So how do we know he won't become, I don't know, what's next for him? How do we know he won't become Buddhist or, I don't know, whatever, Mormon? And then everything he's done now, informed by his God, is what does that make him and his policies?
Well, exactly. You know, the only thing that surprises me is that Indiana got to the gay bigotry bill before Kansas did. I thought Kansas was the clearinghouse for all that weird stuff, thanks to Chris Kobach.
Well, Chris Kobach. Yeah.
Oh, I think I heard you spit on the ground, Diane.
I did. You know, I have to be very careful about things like that, because I was actually teaching. I won't go into how the lecture led to where it led to, but I had a former, someone pretty high up in Homeland Security in the class, and what I did didn't seem to bother anyone, but I was horrified after I did it. Something led to something, and the I uttered the names Rumsfeld in an auditorium and turned and spit on the ground.
Oh, my.
I mean, not spit, really, but the
like, yeah, right. Puh, yeah.
I mean, I was just so visceral. I mean, I said his name and turned him like that. Well, it didn't seem to bother anyone. In fact, we had a blast. We had a blast. You know, I was telling them how I once studied with a German baron at Duquesne University, the phenomenology, this kind of psychology from the continent. And every time I would go into his office, he'd be puffing on a cigar. We'd just do this kind of stream of consciousness conversation. I mean, it wasn't a structured course. I just asked him if I could come to his office as a doctoral student and ask him about that form of psychology. I was curious. And so he would puff on his cigar. So during the lecture with these people, I would sit on the desk at the, you know, at they were, it was a auditorium, a little auditorium, and I would sit on the desk, and every now and then I would just put my head in the air and kind of puff on, you know, like a cigar. But so I was having fun with these people, and that's fine. But to turn and go on the ground,
yeah,
I'm a visiting scholar there. I'll be back, and we like each other, you know. It's a good fit and all. Maybe it just went by so fast I didn't see it, but I don't think so.
You know, it almost sounds like a parody of a Paul Simon song. And he turns them, and he turns around and spits on the ground every time my name gets mentioned.
I know. Yeah, I could not believe.
Me and Rumsfeld down by the schoolyard.
Yeah, I can't believe. I know how it came about, because I was talking about how, who's that former defense secretary who went down to Bob Gates? Bob Gates. He gave a convocation, this Bob Gates. And of course I don't know him, but he gave this convocation as president of Texas A&M.
Right, that's
and
where he
so
came from.
I looked at, and he was saying some things about the responsibility of business schools and their responsibility to deliver ethics and corporate social responsibility. And I know, consider the source, but I don't know. I mean, he said what needed to be said and what should have been said. So I was leading a campaign at the time to put pressure on business schools to deliver more. It was a national thing. We got some results, but really, business schools just can't respond to this was in 2001. I mean, they should have been responding to the crises with, you know, in some
yeah.
major ways. But anyway, so I wrote him this, because the convocation address on the website, it said, please, do not use without permission. So I wrote to President Gates. And I explained I was writing a book, and I'd like to cite him, his part of his convocation address, and regards, Professor, blah, blah, blah. And he wrote back, "Dear Professor Swanson, it would be my delight, you know, and da, da, da. Best, Bob." You know, he wrote back within the hour.
You yeah, because you're buddies. Person. Right, yeah.
Pardon?
I said, yeah, because you're buddies, Bob.
Yeah. But I just think, I mean, I recall that with some, given what I think of the Bush administration, I think it's just kind of...
Well, just remember, but remember, he got to carry over and be defense secretary
yeah.
under President Not Sure, too.
Right. And he was supposed to be the voice of reason in the room, I suppose. But anyway, I think I was explaining that scenario to this group of executives, and then, I don't know, and that led to something about Rumsfeld, because this is not what I teach at all. Business ethics education, that's one of my areas, but this other area is, I think we just all agreed to have a few minutes of little chit-chat in the middle of the formal lecture. I think that's what happened. But anyway, turning and doing even a mild imitation of spitting, I can tell you I was horrified that I did that. But I was just so comfortable with these people. I couldn't help myself. Anyway, but about Brownback, if I may, I want to ask your opinion, Bob. I want a reality check, if you will, about something.
I don't know how good I am for that, but I'll try.
Well, I've asked my dentist. Today I drove 2 hours to Horton, Kansas, and 2 hours back to see my dentist. I drive that far to go to
that must be some
town.
Good dentist.
Yeah, I think so for sure. And he's in that little town because his mom's in a nursing home and his clients drive from all over to see him. And the little city, basically a former railroad town that is not that anymore, gave him a grant to set up there. So I think he's extraordinary. And so I do that. And I told him in the middle of, you know, he'd have his hands in my mouth and then he'd turn to do something. And I said, in these intervals, I want to pass a theory of mine on to you and see what you think. And the bottom line, before I run it by you, because I want your opinion on it, in the final analysis, to give you a preview of his conclusion, he said, well, I trust Sam Brownback too much to conclude that. Okay, so, I know, and he's a sharp guy, and he was agreeing with most of what I said, and we wouldn't have, I mean, I wouldn't make my dentist mad while he's working on my mouth anyway, but I ran this by him. The other day, I was just looking at Kansas News, and I'd be interested in what Carol thinks about this, too, if she, the next state over, is also paying attention to what's happening in Kansas. Okay, we all know about the deficit, and we know that he's robbing the highway fund and the pension funds, and we know that whole formula, okay? And what's interesting to me is when I go online and look at the responses to newspaper articles, I mean, he has no supporters in those responses. I mean, you know, Topeka Capital Journal accounts, the City Star, Wichita, I mean, no one's defending him. But you know the consequences, and it's almost like a formula, you know, and, you know, don't tax corporations, don't tax the rich, get the shock doctrine going, rob social services, blah, 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 blah. And then regressive taxes on cigarettes. And people in blog spots are just saying, well, we'll just drive to Missouri and get those, you know. So none of it seems to be very well thought out. The one thing I've been looking at in this scenario is that it's being proposed in the Kansas House and Senate, and I don't know if it's a draft bill, I can't recall, but it's being proposed in some form that is eliciting pushback from farmers, because what the Brownback administration is proposing is an increase in property taxes on farmers. And for decades, we've had a formula where the farmers are not taxed based on market. They're taxed based on some formula related to their productivity. And that way the family farm stays here. Okay, you see what I'm, the picture?
Yeah, sure, yeah.
Okay, so I got this email from our representative, House Representative, Kansas House Representative, and she's Democrat. She's Democratic. And she was saying in the newsletter that a lot of people have a misconception that corporate farms, corporate, you know, the corporations own agriculture in Kansas. She said they own only half of 1%. And then it just clicked in my mind. I'm like, click, click.
Ding.
And I'm going to run something past you. I've never heard anyone here say. I've never seen it in writing. Maybe it's all my years of teaching corporate cases and, you know, but what I thought I saw in that moment when I read that from Representative Carlin, I'm like, oh, is this the end game? The corporations, Monsanto, Cargill, they'll get to own Kansas. If the farmers can't, the farmers are saying we can't pay the new property tax formula, the proposed property tax formula. Well, is this the way that corporations finally own the breadbasket here?
Well, I think that's a perfectly valid hypothesis, Diane. And let me take it one step further. I'm sure you know in the history of the United Kingdom, you know what the enclosure was.
Yes. Yes. To their shame.
Well, how is something like this not that?
Well, instead of the manor,
the corporation is the new manor.
Yeah. Well, and also what I'm thinking is, I'm pretty clear on what this land-grant university here offers agriculture. I mean, we are world-class in grain science. That is no exaggeration.
Yeah.
I mean,
for good reason. I mean, for the same reason there's a school of mines in Colorado and West Virginia. Right.
Exactly.
You know, your land-grant universities...
Yes.
The whole reason behind land-grant universities, the Morrill Act, 1862, all of that, is to actually serve the needs of a given state. That's why there was so much Sturm und Drang when Scott Walker up in Wisconsin tried to change the mission statement of the University of Wisconsin from making the lives of all Wisconsinonians better to, or whatever it was, to... creating a workforce for Wisconsin.
Oh, the Wisconsin idea, right?
Yeah, exactly, the Wisconsin idea.
Yeah.
And the Wisconsin idea was a very progressive idea, and of course you live in a state where, thanks to things like the Grange, progressivism had much of its nativity. I mean, last night on the program, Mr. Stress, Bill, brings up, you know, the books of L. Frank Baum. Well, there's a reason that the Wizard of Oz is set in Kansas.
Right.
You know, free silver, the agrarian movement, all of that. I think your theory is absolutely correct. News Ninja Carol Baker, just wrote in and said, Diane, what Brownback is doing is indefensible. He's merely well-funded and believes Kansas to be a model for the rest of the country. Taxing the farmers is a way to move from family farms to corporate farms. She's got it. She gets it. And then
one here is talking about it or writing about it. And, you know, it's not just that we have world-class grain science. We have, like, every day I'll read something that the university is doing. Like, we're doing something with drones to control to distribute pesticides. Drones. And so what corporations wouldn't like to own that land and have partnership with that kind of institution?
Well, sure. And I mean, look at the water science, the hydrogeology that's taking place. That's the mission of a state university, is to understand what it is that a state does and maximize the ability of the state to do it. Carol writes, do you know a lot of billionaires in the middle of Kansas who row crop? Because no.
Who
row crop, you know, just subsistence farm.
Yeah, well, right, but I still would like to see it in the hands of the family farmer and ranchers that have Monsanto and Cargill.
Oh, golly, absolutely, yes, but the thing is, I remember going back to the earliest Farm Aid, you know, when John Mellencamp and Willie Nelson were getting together trying to help family farmers pay off their mortgages. This is the inexorable move toward, and I think the enclosure is a viable analog to what's going on, you know, just replacing the great land-holding manor houses with corporations. It doesn't seem like a great leap to me, but I also would suggest, Diane, that there is a larger, there's a larger thing at work. For instance, I read today that Piyush Jindal has taken Louisianistan from a government surplus to being deeply in the red now.
Oh yeah.
And that's whether it's him or, you know, what Brownback has done, he's destroying the government of Kansas. Look at Scott Walker in Wisconsin. You know, it's easy, you know, this lunatic who makes Jan Brewer in Arizona look like Mother Jones, for God's sakes. He's such a ridiculous right winger. The goal of all of them in each individual state government environment is to destroy that that state government's ability to respond to the needs of the people. And what you have described is an aspect, an avatar, if you will, of that.
Well, and it's not, and thank you for confirming that this makes sense, but that's not the whole part of the equation that strikes me. Because once that clicked in my mind, oh, this could have been planned all along, or he got himself into a box and now this is the way out. I mean, either way. But here is the response from my dentist that's very telling. I really like my dentist. But this is the kind of response one can easily get here. Okay, as background, Brownback came from a farming town. His parents are farmers. He's in the picture with them for campaign ads. Okay, so he'd be undoing his own, and the Kochs, of course, are in Wichita. Okay, my dentist, a man I really respect, says very seriously, he says, it's an interesting hypothesis, but I trust Brownback, and he doesn't like Brownback, that's another piece. I trust Brownback too much to think that would be his intention. And that's where we will get mowed over. In that comment, people will pause naively thinking, which is kind of a Midwestern thing, naively thinking that no one would behave that way, and then it'll be easy.
And then
right?
When you realize that's exactly how they've behaved, it is entirely too late to stop.
If they ever realize it, really. But yeah. So that was the flip side of it, because there is a naivete about power here, I think, because people really do function pretty well in their communities. And so I think it may be a little much for them to think that someone like Brownback comes from Washington and may have a plan to undermine his own roots and kin. It's outlandish. But you're giving me the reality check that, and Carol too, that is not at all odd.
No, and it's not unreasonable either. By the way, Carol, with a note for you, Carol says, tell Diane my brother-in-law, Barbie's husband, is the nephew of Norman Borlaug.
I don't know who Norman Borlaug is.
Maybe I'm mispronouncing. Borlaug.
Mm-mm.
Okay.
I bet we will get an
illumination momentarily.
That would be good. And in the meantime, would you give me your take on, you know, the allegory Wizard of Oz? I was listening with some interest when you and Bill were speaking of that. And by the way, those slippers were not ruby red in the book, remember? It's been a long time since
that's
I've
true.
On that.
That's true.
I mean, there was something going on about the bimetallic standard, gold or silver, with Williams Jennings Bryan.
Right, right. Well, William and yeah, the free silver movement of the late 19th
yeah,
century.
Yeah. I don't know a lot about that, but I've learned that was.
Well, you know, one of the sad things about William Jennings Bryan, he ran compelling campaigns for the presidency, and in many ways he sort of destroyed his own legacy with the shenanigans that he enacted in Dayton, Tennessee during the Scopes Monkey Trial.
Oh yeah, I've heard you comment on that.
But he, you know, he really was trying to speak up for the farmer, for the working person, and for anybody who's never read it, to revisit William Jennings Bryan's Cross of Gold speech is kind of a model of the rise of progressivism. Norman Borlaug, he's the one who developed the dwarf wheat that saved millions of lives in India. And he won the Nobel Prize for it.
Oh.
Talking about wheat science,
Grain
science.
This is Barbie's husband's...
Uncle.
uncle. Okay. Well, that's good lineage, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And it's a reminder that while and I hate what the presidential season does to us, because we have been taught, and here I sit in West Virginia, you in Kansas, Barbie in Iowa, Carol in Missouri and Hooterville, and for all of us, it feels like we're just sitting in this regressive, blood red, backward, right wing nightmare. We need to be reminded from time to time that great things, great progressive things, Diane, have come out of the so-called heartland.
Oh, yeah. I drove by a co-op today, a farmer's co-op. And you know, if I may offer another thing I like to remember, and this comes out of practical experience. You know, my recent trip a few days away, going from here to Chicago to New York, staying a while in New York and coming back, I decided to observe as many human interactions as I could around business, around airline things, lines, you know, shopping in New York, sometimes being the only white face in a store, just because I drop by Price Right. I just go in if I need water, but, you know, I didn't even understand the logic of the store. I had to ask, you know, I was in another realm, but the reason I'm mentioning it, in all these different settings, I observed human behavior and what was being done, and I saw nothing but people helping one another in various scenarios. Just, you know, from helping some, for many of us, we're deferring to passengers who needed some extra help onto the plane. Some people in grocery stores would defer to someone to cut in front of them in line. I mean, you would think from listening on to the news that everyone is gunning up and everyone's mad at everyone else. I added up in my mind all those various behavioral interactions which were positive, which make society function, which make business go well, goodwill, some trust mixed in, and I thought, you know, what is this America I hear about, you know, magnified in the news? I mean,
well, and it's not so much. I don't know that it's so much magnified in the news, Diane, as it is magnified that individualized, everybody's a rugged individual, lone wolf, and we're at each other's throat. You know, you can, well, I would think that I'm probably saying something that need not almost be said to someone who does what you do. But in my mind, when I look at and think about things like this, I always ask myself, you know, the old Latin question, cui bono?
Mm-hmm.
You know, to whom the benefit?
Mm-hmm.
The reason it benefits. The breakdown of community benefits the right wing, just like the destruction of unions benefits the right wing. A bunch of individuals who all have to negotiate their own pay, who have no protections, who have no collective bargaining agreement in the workplace, that benefits business, that benefits the corporatocracy, that benefits the GOP generally. And the same thing with places, you know. Oh, there's no, you know, remember, Margaret Thatcher famously said, there is no community.
Yeah, this is so fascistic, you know, to sever social bonds and offer oneself up as an alternative, old game. But Bob, I mean, of course you're right in a systems level view, but within those corporations, they count on cooperation among employees.
They have to have it.
And more, this thing about employee engagement is a real thing. Corporations are sending their employees who want to do community projects out into the community to do it. And they have metrics for it, and it's become a thing. And one can question the motivations, but I've talked to some executives and employees and found the motivation impulse is not just
Well, I mean, it was inspiring to see the way that one CEO responded to the news out of Taliban, Indiana, about the bigotry law. saying, you know, let's not do business here. And you know, you can't ask your employees to come here where they will be put in danger. But by the same token, there is a different model in the business world. And if you've not read about this recently, I saw some coverage of the fact that one of Scott Walker's benefactors is a wild-eyed paranoiac right-wing millionaire, billionaire maybe, who runs a store in the upper Midwest called Menards.
Oh, I passed by that today on the edge of Manhattan. It's huge.
So this guy, this guy is a monster. For instance, they're so paranoid about employees stealing inventory that they do not allow their employees to build a house. And in the case of one guy who went ahead and built a house because he had a daughter with a disability and they had to have better accessibility, the guy had a sterling work record over more than 10 years, and the guy just said, fire him.
Is that legal?
Seriously. It is until it isn't, and yeah, he got away with it, and this guy is a big backer of Scott Walker.
Yeah.
And there is, you know, there's that old essay from what, the 50s, the paranoid style in American politics.
Oh yeah.
Well, I think somebody could do a real world beater journal article with the paranoid style in American business.
Well, there's some what do I want to call it? There's some stuff pulling in different directions, to be sure. And we're not hearing about some things that are really forward-looking. And, you know, I get stuff all the time about corporations that are putting out integrated financial reports that report on what they're doing about climate change or how climate change is going to affect them. And it's a lot of triple bottom line reporting, and some of it is in line with the UN Global Compact. I just saw one today for Coca-Cola bottling.
Well, look, but by the same token, Diane, look at the hissy that this right-wing think tank had over Tim Cook saying Apple's going to try to source its energy renewably and sustainably.
I was on the road when I heard you talk about that. But that's why I'm talking about things pulling in a different direction, because there are also social investors who want something different and are more than willing to own stock, like in the benefit corporation.
Right,
you know,
exactly.
There's a demand for that, and so I'm actually seeing that stuff is pulling in different directions, and of course
these right wing think tanks ascribe that to, well, you know, they're just playing to the liberals, as if there's no good business sense in it. When in point of fact, the Pentagon and the business world are looking at climate change as something of grave import to consider. Diane, I hate to do it, but we must go away.
But what
a lovely our conversations always fly past.
I love them. And I'm going to wish you and yours a good evening, Bob. Thanks for the conversation.
Oh, thank you, Diane, and I'm glad you're safely home.
Oh, thank you.
Bye now.
Good night.
The marvelously coherent Diane in Kansas, Stan. Wow. What a conversation. And my head just feels like it's got bees in it from all the things that Diane always brings for me and for us to think about. It's time to get out of here. I want to extend thanks to Matt. Matt jumped in, and now we are almost done with Friday's fundraising, which is amazing. Thank you, Matt, very kindly. Thank you, everyone, for responding this evening. And thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Lottie, Sparky, Carol Baker, Gene, Susan, John Fox, Ben Birch, thanks to Coal River Mountain Watch, and it's really time to get out of here. Y'all have a great night. Back tomorrow for Friday on the Front Porch. Bye now.